Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
I'm joined here in the studio by Paddy Hayes, who's Chief Executive of the ESB. Paddy, you're very welcome to the programme. Since the storm on Friday, a week ago, we've been hearing from listeners every single day about the situations that they're in, and that continues today. A listener says, we're on day 12 in Galway with no power or water. They have a child with a heart condition. The only way of knowing if there's something wrong with him is his lips turning blue and his extremities going cold. We've spent €1,500 over the last 12 days to cover food, water, laundry, heater, gas and diesel. And today, after applying for help, we got a cheque for €150. Now, I know people are working very hard to sort this problem out, but you still have how many thousand? 25,000 customers without power this morning?
Yes. Good morning, Claire. And before I come back to the numbers, can I just acknowledge that we know how difficult it is for everybody who's been out without power and without electricity for all of that time. I can't imagine how hard and how painful it is for people, and how distressing that's been. And we are doing everything that we possibly can with the resources in the company, and also with the help of government and with the help of external teams as well, to get every single person back on supply as quickly as we possibly can.
And I think, in fairness, I think a lot of people understand that crews are working as hard as they can, and we know you've got crews in from overseas and so on. But this listener who tells us that her pregnant daughter and the family are still without electricity, and they were told it was coming back last night, but then in the afternoon that date moved to the 6th of February, and they were so disappointed, as you can understand. Can you not commit to a date and keep it? Can you explain what's happening there?
Yes, and I understand the frustration that for people when our estimated restoration times move. And really, just to put the whole storm restoration in context, this was a weather event that we haven't experienced before in Ireland. My understanding is that these are the highest wind speeds since records began. The closest thing we've seen to this was back in the 1940s. I think your own George Lee described it as a weather bomb, and it's done massive destructive damage to the network. Mm-hmm. In fact, we're seeing two or three times as much damage to our network as we've ever seen in storms like Storm Ophelia or Storm Darwin in the past. And it's that extent of damage, particularly in some of the areas where which are more remote from the network. It's that extent of damage that's caused the time taken to restore power. And the way in which the system works is electricity runs from the larger areas of the grid into the more remote areas. And what we find when we're restoring power is it's absolutely critical to get the large backbone lines back first, because that can feed everybody and feed the maximum numbers. And in some cases, as we're getting to the numbers where you've got smaller people fed off smaller parts of the grid, we can find more damage that hasn't previously been discovered until we've restored power to the backbone line.
And that's why the date moves.
It's even though we're moving resources into the most badly affected areas all the time, and resources have moved right the way across the country from our own teams into the affected areas, we can still be finding damage as we're reconnecting supply to a backbone line, and then finding that 4/5 of the customers in that area get their power restored, but 1/5 might be sitting behind a piece of damage that hasn't previously been identified.
Just going back to what you said there about it being an unprecedented storm, and again, I think people understand that, but Peter Thorne, who sits on the Climate Change Advisory Council, has been talking about this. He said that you have to be ready for this. You have to expect the unprecedented. And why aren't we? And that's a reasonable question to ask. I mean, so many people want to know, why aren't our power lines underground, or why aren't they more robustly hung over our country so that this doesn't happen? Can you explain to people why that's the case?
Yes, I saw those remarks, and the peak wind speed here was 180 or over 180 kilometres an hour. As I've said, we haven't seen that ever during the time that we've been measuring wind speeds, as I understand it, and the last time like it was in 1940. So we do build the network to a particular standard. And what we are going to do now, and what we have to do now, I think, in the light of this once in a generation event is we will be taking stock after this and looking, talking to the climate scientists and identifying whether and how we need to change our network if there's an expectation or a probability of events like this happening more frequently.
In that same piece, there was an estimation from Dr. Barry Hayes around the cost of what it would be to put those lines underground. And a figure of 100 billion euro was mentioned. Is that right?
I'm not sure about the figure, but what I can say is that we have built our network overhead for a number of reasons. The first is it's a very cost-effective way of building network for the population dispersion that we have. It's also a very flexible way. It means we can add to that network very, very quickly if we want to make add customers in and add houses and communities in. So it's been a very flexible and very effective way of running the network. It is more costly to put a network underground. It also means longer routes because at the moment our network goes over fields and not along roadways necessarily. So there is a cost associated with that. But what we will do is we will look and we will take stock and we will be open to thinking about anything that might need to be done if there is an expectation that events like this, which as I say, is seen as once in a generation, if events like this are likely and probable to happen again in the future.
So are you saying now that changes will come in the aftermath of this and what you and your customers have experienced? Is that what we can expect?
So we will, Claire, we will absolutely take stock of this. We're looking at a number of things. Obviously, right at the moment, the full effort is being put into the restoration of electricity for the remaining customers. But we will be taking stock after this. We'll be looking at things like we've talked about, the potential for higher wind speeds in the future. We have spent a lot of money over the last 4 or 5 years on resilience of the system, 950 million. We'll be looking at our next 5-year programme, which has already been proposed. We'll be taking stock before that's finalised now to see whether we need to put additional investment into that. And if I could say, we also need to look at the issue of trees and the impact of, in a number of cases, tree damage, trees being
forestry
impacted by the wind.
And we have seen those pictures of the trees flattened and caused massive problems. And in some cases, we've heard that it's very difficult to find out who owns the trees or to get in touch with them. Is that happening?
But, what we're doing in those areas is with support, we are clearing that timber. And that's one of the challenges in terms of getting the latest customers restored, is that challenge of timber. But it's really important. Like, we have trees in Ireland. They're really important and equally, if we are going to expect winds like this in the future, it's really important that we sit down, and we're planning to sit down with the other stakeholders here and the other people who have an influence here, to ensure that we can find a way of making sure that electricity infrastructure and trees can work.
Well, what do you need to see happen? Because you're left cleaning up the mess.
So we will be sitting down with all the stakeholders in this area, Claire, to work out. It can be different in different circumstances. There might be areas where the network configuration can change. There might be other areas where we need a corridor, falling distance from a line, against the possibility of a tree or part of a forest being blown down by the wind. And our plan is to take stock of that and to sit down and work with the stakeholders and find a way in which we can reduce and minimise this possibility of the future.
In all of this, in looking at all of these problems and seeing what you can do now looking to the future, your starting point has to be that this can't happen again, that you've got people out of power for weeks. I mean, do you agree that that's unacceptable?
It's absolutely, we need to take stock and we need to look at this and Claire, our own crews are part of these communities. Like, we're a community-based organisation. I've been out to Galway and to Cavan and to Carrick-on-Shannon. I've talked to our crews who are devastated with the damage that's been done. They're disappointed that because of the extent of the damage, we haven't been able to get customers back quicker. And we are absolutely determined, and they are absolutely determined, to get every single customer back. So Of course, we will be taking stock.
But it doesn't sound like you're saying to me this won't happen again, this can't happen again, because the problems are so profound with the infrastructure.
Well, I think that we need to take this in the context of an event the likes of which hasn't happened since the 1940s. In fact, this weather bomb event where we've had the highest gust
speeds. I know you said that, but I'm just going back to what Peter Thorne said. You have to expect this now. So how do we deal with it? How do we make sure that people are not without power? Is it through having more generators? Is it a grant-aided system so people can go out and buy their own? What is the solution?
So we are, as part of our taking stock, we're going to be looking at three things. We're going to be looking at the resilience of the network itself. We've spent a large amount of money over the last 4 years. We've got a lot in our programme over the next five, but we will be taking stock to see whether that's sufficient and whether we need to do things with the existing network. As I say, we will be sitting down with the stakeholders in the space of trees and forestry, which is a complicated area, to make sure that we can find a way of minimising the potential damage if these wind speeds increase in the future. Mm-hmm. And we will also be, in the aftermath of this, be sitting down with the other utilities, the areas like Irish Water and telecoms, to try and understand how we can build resilience, more resilience into the system.
And what about the issue of generators? We had Michael Fitzmaurice, the TD, on the programme saying there should be a grant system so that people have their own power supply in the event of this happening again. Would you support an idea like that?
Well, Claire, our job really is to try and make sure that we get and we maintain and that we get power back as quickly as possible to customers who are affected.
But you can't do that. I mean, you've proven that you can't do that.
Well, again, I just put that back in the context of an event that hasn't happened in a generation. And we know that there are a number of generators on the system, and people are using generators. It's much more happening much more frequently than it was before. And again, we need to think about and we are thinking about and taking stock of the resilience of the system against the possibility of a one-off event like this becoming more frequent.
Now, what about compensation? Is it time that we looked at a robust compensation scheme for people? In Scotland, if you're an electricity customer and you have an outage, you get £85 if you've no power for 48 hours, and that's up to a maximum of 2,000. We should have that here, shouldn't we?
Well, we have a scheme at the moment, a charter payment scheme, where in the normal course of events, if customers are out because of an issue with the network, there are some charter payments. That doesn't apply to storms. And what instead, I think the government has stepped forward and offered a humanitarian assistance scheme for customers who are out of power, who have been impacted by that. And I think that's the appropriate way to do it.
Well, I'm sure you would say that, because it means that the ESB isn't paying anything.
Well, I think the schemes in the UK, what actually happens is, as I understand it, that a customer will get paid a payment if they're out under a storm, but ultimately that cost of that payment is ultimately recovered by the networks company and ultimately paid for by all customers. So it's a socialisation.
So all ESB customers would have to pay for that, is what you're saying.
Exactly. And therefore, I think the most appropriate place for this, which the governments have taken on, is the humanitarian assistance.
So what will people get back then? You mentioned that there is some sort of payment charter there.
There is a payment charter in normal times, but
it doesn't apply. So nothing, not even the public service levy.
No, that doesn't apply during storm situation. Again, for the reason that I've said, which is that ultimately, overall, those costs would be recovered from customers generally and would increase the cost base.
Right, that's extraordinary that people would have to pay the public service levy when they've got no power for 12 days. So essentially their bill remains the same, just subtract the electricity that they didn't use.
Yeah, so I understand how challenging that is when people think about it that way. But effectively the distribution, use of system charge is something that's allocated across all customers over the scope of a year to fund the network and to fund the investment in the network. And it's therefore divided across all customers.
Okay. Is there nothing you feel the ESB should do for customers here, the 25,000 today, for example, who are out for 12 days?
Well, I think, Claire, the most important thing we can do is what we are doing at the moment, which is putting every effort that we have with all of our resources. We've got 1,500 network technicians working on this. We've got over 1,000 of our permanent contractors working here. We've got 400 international crews. We've got a team of about 1,300 people in working behind the scenes supporting supply
chain. Yeah, but listeners to this would say, so you should. You know, you're a company that made huge profits, over 800 million in 2023, and you're saying, no, we're not going to give anything to the people who are freezing and their contents of their freezer and their fridge gone. Some people are staying in hotels out of their own pockets.
And that the government has stepped up, and there's been a whole of government approach to this, Claire, which offers the humanitarian assistance scheme, which, as I understand it, will and can compensate people for the cost of alternative accommodation. And the most important thing that we can do, and we're trying to do it, and we're doing it, is getting customers back connected with our electricity.
So nothing from the ESB in terms of help to buy a loaf of bread or to go and buy a hot meal. You got to go to the government to get that. That's your bottom line on that.
Yeah, what we are doing is restoring supply to the customers who are out, and we are doing that to the utmost of our ability.
Have you got a handle on how much this is going to cost the ESB?
No, I'm not sure how much it's going to cost yet, but it will be significant. It will cost tens of millions.
And what will that do in terms of the cost of electricity and the bills for everybody?
Well, ultimately, that's something that gets scrutinised. And in 2026, it's likely that will those charges which are allowed there will find their way back into the overall cost of our distribution system network.
OK, so prices will go up, you feel, in the aftermath of this storm?
Well, there is a cost associated with this that will ultimately be borne by across the electricity network as a whole. And again, Claire, it is a devastating and destructive storm, the likes of which we have never seen before.
All right. I'm still getting very many messages in from people who are in Roscommon, people in Carna, people in Leitrim, people in Galway and Moycullen who are still without power. And you know, this listener, and this goes back to what you were saying at the beginning, this texter and the six neighbouring households are without power, but they live 5 minutes from the village where everybody has power. But you've explained to us how that happens. Is there a definitive date, though, when you believe everybody will be back up and running?
Well, Claire, these things are dynamic for the reasons that I've explained. Sometimes faults are found only after a line has been reconnected in a local area. But our expectation is we're down below 25,000 as we speak. Our expectation is that we would be down in terms of the number of customers left to restore power to, down at about 10,000 by tomorrow night. The progress has been very strong by the crews who are working on this, with the view that the vast, vast majority of those would be restored by the weekend. There will be it is likely that there will be a handful of customers whose restoration times go into the weekend. We are updating the estimated restoration times regularly. We know that that can be devastating for people to see a restoration time go out, but we think it's appropriate to be straight with people. And to
so there may be people who've been told now that their power will be back on the 5th, which is tomorrow, or the 6th, which is Thursday. But you're saying they need to be prepared for the fact that they mightn't have power until the weekend.
Well, we are regularly reviewing our estimated restoration times, and the restoration times that we have on the system, particularly as we go through today and tomorrow, are our best expectation. And the closer we get to the end of this, the more likely the estimated restoration times are to be correct, because the less likelihood there is of lots more damage being found.
Okay, I have a listener here who says, my almost 89-year-old mother is living in a house without power since the morning of the 24th and has been given 4 restoration dates and still has no power. Communication from the ESB has been so poor, especially now that most of the power is back. Are you satisfied with your communications to customers?
We'll review everything, both in terms of taking stock about the implications of weather events like this in the future, but also in terms of our storm response, Claire. So we have stood up extra call centre staff across the organisation. We've doubled the number of call centre staff. We've seen an unprecedented numbers of people checking in with PowerCheck. We've used spokespeople to talk on national local radio. We've tried to provide information as well in the media. We've worked with local communities and the county councils as well in terms of providing information. Of course, I understand, and you know, I really understand how people will hang on to an estimated restoration time date and then feel devastated when that changes. But we are trying to communicate as best we can and as accurately as we can in this this unprecedented circumstance.
Okay, we'll leave it there, Paddy. But thank you for coming in. That's Paddy Hayes, who's the CEO of the ESB. We'll take a break back after this.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.